Isaiah 39. At that time, King Merodach Baladan, son of Baladan of Babylon, sent envoys with letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he heard that he had been sick and had recovered. Hezekiah welcomed them. He showed them his treasure house, the silver, the gold, the spices, the precious oil, his whole armory, all that was found in his storehouses. There was nothing in his house or in all his realm that Hezekiah did not show them. Then the prophet Isaiah came to King Hezekiah and said to him, "What did these men say? From where did they come to you?" Hezekiah answered, "They have come to me from a far country, from Babylon," he said. "What have they seen in your house?" Hezekiah answered, "They have seen all that is in my house. There is nothing in my storehouses that I did not show them." Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Days are coming when all that is in your house and that which your ancestors have stored up until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. Some of your own sons who are born to you shall be taken away. They shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." Then Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "The word of the Lord that you have spoken is good." For he thought, "There will be peace and security in my days." And there's also another scripture for Mark 2:18 through 20. Now John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, and people came and said to him, "Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" Jesus said to them, "The wedding guests cannot fast while the bridegroom is with them, can they? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast on that day."
We watched late night TV, and this week it was Jimmy Kimmel from Brooklyn. And one of his guests was David Letterman, the old guard. And Dave came on there, and he's younger than I am, but he's got a lot more white beard, if you've seen him lately. And Kimmel asked Letterman about how he reflected on what he had been involved in there for many years. And basically, David Letterman said, "I'm glad I did it, I'm glad I quit, and I'm glad about the successors." And that's really how I feel coming back here, and I think once every 16 years is about right to preach. And I'm glad I was here. I'm really glad I retired when I did, and I'm really glad for a really good successor. Someone who has intelligence, spiritual preaching, who is a force for justice, and who is a compassionate shepherd. Someone who's grown as she's helped all of us grow. When Sarah asked me to be here today and offer something, she said, "Can we have something that will remind us of the special character of this church?" Those people last night who are not members here or in other places, they caught the special character of this church. But we need maybe just to think about it again. So I have some vintage thoughts, themes that will be recognized by old-timers, and some fresh thoughts as well to share. When my daughters were young, they liked me as little girls to in the evening to read them Winnie the Pooh stories. It was big back then. And so the favorite, though, was the one in which Winnie the Pooh and Piglet were there. And Piglet asked Winnie the Pooh, "Do you want milk or honey with your porridge?" And then Winnie the Pooh would answer, but Becky and Beth and I would all shout, "Both." We want both. And so many areas of life are best with a balance of both. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, but all play and no work makes Jack even duller. I'm a big fan of balance in both. So years ago, when I came for the first time into this lovely sanctuary, I looked and I saw the cushioned pews. I hadn't had that before. And I saw the cross lifted and lighted overhead. And at that time, they became powerful symbols for me for what I hope to lead and experience in this church as a member and as a pastor. That the inclusion of the cushion of comfort and the cross of sacrifice means that we will seek to have here a place of comfort and a place of call. A place to enjoy one another, to party and celebrate, and a place to be stirred up to serve for the greater purposes of God's love. Now, some would say, Gary, you're just saying that because you're a Libra. Your cosmic paradigm is to want balance. Well, yes, but I think balance is needed in other ways and by all of us, and that balance and both are strong in the biblical tradition. Let me share with you a passage from the Hebrew Bible. It's Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. And I have to say, the first time I ever read this, I was shocked by it, because it says to the people, set apart a tithe of all the yield of your fields and bring it yearly into the presence of the Lord at the temple. And there, eat of your tithe and grain, drink of your wine and your oil, so that you may learn to reverence the Lord. Didn't say just give it and leave it. Enjoy it. And then later in that passage, it says, if you go to the local sanctuaries, because it's too far to travel to Jerusalem, the temple, then you may turn your seed and your animals and all that you've raised and nourished through the year, 10% of that you can turn into money. And then come to the sanctuary, and with the money secure in hand, go to the place that the Lord your God will choose and spend the money for whatever you wish. Oxen, sheep, wine, strong drink, whatever you desire, and there you shall eat together in the presence of the Lord, you and your household rejoicing together. And don't forget the Levites, they were the pastors, because they don't have anything supporting them. I like that. It's a balance of sacrificial giving, 10%, that's a lot to bring, and takes time to bring it. But we want you to really enjoy it and have a great party. Intimately connected with the sacrificial giving of the people was a celebration. Eat, drink, and be merry. Now, we see Jesus also lifting up both sides to this in the passage that was read to us this morning, where Jesus and his disciples are basically having a party. And the disciples of John the Baptist and of the Pharisees came and said, this is supposed to be a day of fasting and sacrifice. Why are you having such a good time? And Jesus basically says, get out of here. There's going to be bad times, tough times, sacrificial times, but right now it's party time. That's what he said. And so I think we see through the Gospels that there is a time for sacrifice and discipline, and there's a time for celebration. And Jesus, amazingly, in the gospel accounts, comes forth with quite a balanced faith. Because on one hand, the gospels show Jesus more times having table fellowship and fun than any other activity. The gospels again and again place him at parties, associating with known wild and crazy guys and gals, encouraging stuffed shirts to lighten up, shocking the pious, creating more wine when they ran out, welcoming a woman that was trapped in a men's club. Jesus loved hanging out with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, rapping with Mary, chiding Martha for being too often too serious, and bringing life back to Lazarus. Jesus enjoyed conversation with a woman at the well, even though it broke religious taboos and crossed cultural boundaries. And it's astounding that these accounts of Jesus were written 50 to 75 years later, when Jesus was being venerated as the Lord and Redeemer of the church, and they were not ashamed to present their Lord and Redeemer as one who jarred the religious people of his day, because he was determined to enjoy friends and welcome strangers to the celebration of life. But look at the other side of Jesus, too, that the Gospels bring us, the side in which he embodies the call to sacrificial care, going out of his way to minister to the hurting, going out of his way to touch the outcast, going out of his way to rescue the woman who was entrapped. And then Jesus faced the cross with courage and gave up his life because he embodied God's love for all the world. In the Gospel of Thomas, written a little later, not in our Christian canon, but perhaps has some accurate reflection on Jesus, has a quote of Jesus there where Jesus is said to say, "If you're near me, you're near the fire." And I think that's pretty authentic to what we learn about Jesus in the ambiguity or balance of this. A fire can mean warm and comfort, but a fire can mean the risk of persecution. Martin Luther, the reformer, said that the Christian believer is the perfectly free Lord of all, subject to none. And the Christian believer is the dutiful servant of all, subject to all. One of the men most venerated in our and beloved in our American Baptist denomination is the Reverend Dr. Adam Morales, father of our moderator, Marty. And I did not get a chance to know him well, but Adam Morales was the American Baptist executive for Spanish-speaking churches all over our country, including Puerto Rico. And of course, he had to travel to all these places and visit all these churches, building churches, encouraging the people. But years later, still, when we see some of the people, Marty and I, from that time of her father's ministry, they say, "Oh, we loved Adam Morales. He worked so hard for us, and he made us laugh." He had that balance. Authentic biblical faith is that balance of the cushion, enjoying blessings, feeling groovy, kicking back, partying on, digging life. And it's also the cross, sacrificial love, acts of mercy, binding up the wounded, setting free the oppressed, speaking up despite danger, caring to the point of risk, working even when weary, exploring the unknown, and walking with intention the Via Dolorosa of Jesus. FCC has been a place and ministry of both. We need reminders of it. And we need reminders if we need to rebalance our lives in either one of these areas. So that's why we proclaim a personal gospel and a social gospel. That's why we avail ourselves of sacred sources and secular sources. That's why we experience the serious and the sensual. Why we partake of the heavenly and the hilarious. Why we live with commitment and celebration, a balanced faith. And it was a great joy for me to stand back there last night when Kathleen Gregory, one of the newer members of our church, came up here and with such eloquence expressed the fact that she and her husband Clint and boys, when they came to town from Idaho, said, "What are the chances we can find a church that's serious about the issues of our time and is fun?" And they said, "We found it right here blocks from where we're living at the corner of Fairview and Fair." Bless my heart. And I encourage you, brothers and sisters of Fairview Community Church, to continue discovering and developing avenues for building your personal relationships, for being the church in that way, and for finding a place to celebrate life. Nobody says the Christian life is easy, but there's no reason it can't be fun. That's kind of what has been a message here through the years. And keep caring, brothers and sisters. And that care, if you'll allow me to get away from my dictum of balance, I want to say just a little more about. What does that mean? What kinds of care should we be offering, even sacrificially? First, obviously, the Bible calls us to care for the stranger, for the alien, the hungry, the homeless, the dazed and confused. If there's any sort of ultimate judgment, Jesus says it rides on how we respond to, I was hungry, did you give me food? I was thirsty, did you give me drink? I was weary, did you give me rest? I was homeless, did you give me shelter? Yes, we're to care for those sort in our land and in our church. Trevor Noah on The Daily Show this week had a fellow named Common. You young people would know he's a rapper of some repute. And Common has a new album out, and he spoke powerfully about the call for artists and others to give to the care and the well-being of those less able. And his album is called Stand Up for Someone. And that's one aspect of our caring. But secondly, in our care and our call to care, we must always remember that it includes tenderness, compassion, and genuine attention to those who are close by us. A spouse, a family member, a work associate, a neighbor next door, a grieving parent, a friend with cancer or unemployment. From the old musical Hair came the line, "You care about strangers, about social injustice. What about a needing friend? I need a friend." In our caring out there, we cannot neglect the caring that's needed close by. Now, 10 or 20 years ago, even 10 or 20 centuries ago, that would have been it. Those two. Care for those out there, care for those close by. But no more. There is a third caring focus that looms large in our day. It was read in our scripture this morning, and it's care for those who come after us, those who are younger than us, and maybe not even born yet. And that's why when I read sometime back this 39th chapter of Isaiah, I said, he's talking about today. I don't think the prophets are some kind of magical thing where they predict, you know, who will win the lottery or something like that. But they do have an insight into what could come and why it might come and what we ought to be recognizing of. And Isaiah really has it here for us. The story's about the king of Babylon coming to visit King Hezekiah in a smaller kingdom. And the smaller King Hezekiah wanted to say, hey, I'm not bad myself. Come and let me show you all my gold, all my silver, my armory, all the things. I want to impress you with this. Well, the king of Babylon was impressed and went back home. Isaiah comes in and says, who is that? It was the king of Babylon. What did you do? I showed him everything we have. And Isaiah says, the day is coming, and will be, when the king of Babylon will be back to conquer this country, to turn your sons into eunuchs, to take your people away as servants with fishhooks in their nose, it says another place, into captivity. And King Hezekiah has only one question. When will this be? And when he hears the news, he says, that's a good word, for there will be peace and security in my lifetime. Don't we see that today? A selfishness of so many that want to accumulate wealth and power today, whose attitude coincides with that of King Hezekiah. As long as I get mine in my lifetime, what the hell does it matter the destructive forces and policies that will wreak havoc upon our place, pollute the planet, corrupt the very foundations of humanity, as long as it's not in my lifetime? I believe that's the attitude of those, many of those in power today. And King Hezekiah ruined it for one society, his. But today's arrogance and greed, disguised too often as just good business, propped up too often by pious religion, phony patriotism, and abject apathy threatens to destroy it for all and for all to come. This is real, and this is huge. And of course, one little church can't stem the selfish tide, but we can be part of a greater network calling us and joining with, so that we can help bring about an awareness, an enlightenment, and a change. We are the first generations on this earth to face this challenge. And God calls us to care beyond the pale of our own lives, into the peril awaiting for our planet and its future inhabitants. That caring has to be there too. This church, this little light, is so important in the lives of individuals and families as a steady reminder to keep on celebrating and keep on caring. This church, this little light, is so important in joining with other voices, sacred and secular, to find and do the will of God and to bring the compassion of joy into the wider world. And so I say to you, old timers, new timers, middle timers, don't you get weary, children. Don't you get weary. Find the right balance in your own lives. Find the right balance in your church. Come here and get some spiritual rest. Come here and give some energetic effort. Don't you get weary, children. Don't you get weary. Keep on walking. Keep on talking. Keep on praising God. Reverend Sarah, keep on walking. Keep on talking. Keep on leading. Keep on bleeding. Keep on praising God, brothers and sisters.